Hello, good evening, and welcome to Tech Grumps, the weekly show in which we analyse everything that's shit, crap, bollocks and wank about technology. With me this week are David Frost himself, Tom Morris.
I like that big pokey thing in your trousers. It's really standing quite prominently.
Later, big boy. And also, Ian Forrester.
Hello, I bought a landline because Skype wasn't working for me, and I've also got a cold, so I'm going to be really, really, really clogged up on this phone call.
There's no problem, Ian. It's just like old times. And also with us this week is Abiza Nasser. He's come on to congratulate us on last week's show. Beezer.
Hello, I'm caught talking to you from Skype on a Mac.
And there's also me, Nick Ferrier. Hello.
We need to get Richard Nixon on
the show. I am not a good.
That's brilliant. So, the Mac App Store, I think, has to be our first topic.
I suppose I'd better start off. It's going to carry on from last week.
Are we talking about that? I didn't realise we would be talking about that.
Yes, you did.
Well, we have Abba on the show, so it's...
Well, I couldn't come on last Friday, because after the Mac Store announcements, we have a monthly meeting of Mac developers, and we had a special meeting on that Friday, where we just thought, rather than bang our heads on Twitter and trying to figure out what's going on, we just got together, had a curry, and spoke about it in person.
That was hilarious, by the way. That felt like you all rushed off to do this.
We didn't rush off. It's just
you did.
Yeah, we did. Yes,
there
we did. It was important.
It was like, oh, I've got to be with my group. This time of great stress.
It's a support group, yeah.
So it's Objective C Anonymous.
Coco Touch, baby.
You need to place your faith in a higher power, Steve Jobs.
Anyway, get on with the story.
It's not that. When I was listening to last week's show, I was on a bus, and I was literally almost spitting at people next to me. What I heard was, Ian said Mac Store cracked up. Nick said Mac App Store cracked up. And Tom, you just sort of caved in and go, oh, I'm going to buy a Linux machine.
I already have a Linux machine.
But you said you wouldn't have bought a Mac if you'd known the App Store was coming. And you talk about that, the Mac App Store, it's some sort of... Beg your pardon?
That was Ian's contribution.
I beg your pardon?
Sorry, it was me just moving my computer.
Oh, okay. It was all the grumpiness of it out. You mentioned the Mac App Store as if it's some sort of radical change in the whole Mac environment, and I think you're missing the major points that were brought up by it. I've gone all high pitched. It's not about how it's closing the system, which is probably what you're talking about, and how it's all going to become closed, and you're only going to get apps on that Steve wants you to have, and you're going to have the same situation on the desktop as you have on the mobile platform, which is everything is vetted and you can only get things on through a gatekeeper. But the people who are really affected are developers and users.
I think we were taking up the cudgels for the users.
Well, you're about the only Mac user on here.
No, both, definitely, both. I certainly had one eye on the devs.
And the point of view from the devs isn't that, oh dear, the Mac App Store is going to be closed and we're only going to be selling our software through there and we'll have to get approval because, and the details aren't clear on this yet, but it's not going to be only getting apps from the App Store. You can still load apps the way you normally do.
I think the concern is more of a sort of slippery slope that 10.8 comes out or 10.9,
I'll get to that bit. But the real points you should have been asking are, how are you going to have a Mac App Store working in parallel with an already established ecosystem for distributing apps, which is just off a website, you go through your own payment processor, and you install a new machine. You know, the real questions are, how are you going to have trial versions? How are you going to have paid upgrades? Are there going to be exclusivity deals? Are there going to be any rights of, well, I doubt it, are there going to be rights of recourse for application terminations? What exactly does it mean when you can, when they say that one of the clauses is they can reject your app for any reason whatsoever? Are you going to get details about your users in the same way that you can from selling your own apps or your own website, where you're a lot closer to the users? What's the support queue going to be like? Is there going to be driving down of the prices, downward pressure that some people are already seeing on the iPhone and iPad apps? These are the real questions to be asking about the Mac App Store, not having a sort of a vapid laugh about the whole system.
It sounds very much like
Mac App Store and we're on the same.
If I could jump in there, because I think we're starting from a position with a history on this show, right? We've been talking about this since we started, because it's interesting, right? And excuse me, I've got a terrible cold. So there's clearly two camps, as it were. There is a camp of people who think that it doesn't matter much. And there's a camp of people who do think that it matters a lot, you know, that the Apple product-y closing things down, and there's a whole range of opinions between those two camps of people who think that it doesn't matter so much, or that technically it doesn't matter because you can escape, or because, at some point if Apple do go evil, then I'll get out, which is Tom's view. And I think that we were operating from that presumption. You know, a number of times it's been said on this show, they're never going to do that to OSX.
Yeah.
It's been actually said that. Cristiano said that. I can't remember if you said that. I think Tom said that. They're never going to do it to OSX, which looked like a reasonable thing to say. But here we are.
I don't think I've ever said that they weren't going to release an app store. I said that
they'll never close it down.
I don't think they would ever make it so that you would only be able to get stuff through an app store.
Yeah.
And I also was saying that I was having a good go at sites like TechCrunch and other sites like that for coming up with these conclusions, basically pulling them straight out of their own arseholes, which is what we do.
But hang on a second. But now you have changed your view, or a bunch of people have changed their view and said, maybe that will happen, actually.
Yeah.
It does look more likely now than it was before.
Absolutely.
To be fair to us, Abiza, that's all we were doing. Those questions are interesting, but those are for Mac developers to ask.
But they're the real questions to ask, because they're the real questions to ask of people who are directly impacted by these statements.
It's
not the fine detail. I mean, you're gonna have a go at guys like TechCrunch. At least they're sort of investing in it. It's just what's annoying to people, and it's maybe. I mean, you've heard me talk on this show before. I'm not the sort of person that says there is one way to do things and that's the end of it. You know, I'm not saying that the Mac is the only way and everyone else is a loser for using whatever applications they're using. I'm not the sort of person who says that use Git, you're an idiot if you use Mercurial. I'm not the sort of person who says it's Vim over Emacs. I'm just saying I have my preferences. I have my reasons for my preferences. That's me stating what, you know, I'm not really that bothered whether people have use a Windows machine or a Linux machine. Yeah.
The difference is, right, is that you are saying you didn't want to do that. Maybe, you have the kind of best intentions for the Mac platform, but the difference is that, when you have someone who has their hand, up the kind of the kind of puppet's kind of like backside, clearly saying to the public and to his developers and everyone else, saying, we are the best and, we wanted to do it this way, then it's natural to assume that he thinks that the software is so great, why would anyone else, why would you want to use any other software? And the assumption is, yeah, that, you know, someday it will be very locked down. And that day is not that far off.
Well, I think trying to read too much into what Steve says on the stage is going too far.
On the stage, it's all in the stage. Everywhere he says, you're talking about
the CEO of a corporation. You've already established you can't really trust corporations because he's got his own point of view and he's got his own agenda about.
The difference is that he's the one that's driving all this. He's the one that made the decision. We don't want Flash on the Mac platform.
It's not Steve that's making these. It's Apple that's making the decisions. Leave Steve out of it. Let's just say Apple are making decisions as a corporation. Steve is not going to be with us forever. Steve's going to go away. You think Phil's going to suddenly step up and go, thank God he's gone, right, you know. Forget the App Store. Let's put Flash back on. Let's put Java back on. It's not going to happen. You're talking about a corporate structure that has its own goals. Mm. And if you think Apple doesn't have an idea of where it's going to be in 5 years' time,
Apple seems like
to just sort of put it as Steve is saying that makes it sound very much like there's. I know it is partly on
previous experience and on knowledge of the way that Apple works, you know. I can't disclose exactly how, but I know a certain amount of the way that Apple is kind of corporately structured, and the way that if Steve says this, that's what happens.
Yes, it's probably is
and
the case.
And that person may be, you know, completely good at the wrong end of the mile, but, you know, that's what the Apple rest of the division will do.
Okay. But you're still whatever you're talking about Apple. You're not talking about Steve. You're talking about Apple, and it's all very well saying, "Oh, Steve has this idea," but really, it's Apple that has the idea.
This seems like so splitting hairs, guys.
This is splitting hairs. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that when you come across and you're saying Steve says this, Steve says that, what you're really doing is you're turning off people who want to listen to an argument with an opinion, and you're just turning it into something that sounds like a personal attack on someone, because it does sound a lot. To other people, you know, sometimes it sounds like that to me until I think better of it. But it sounds very much like it's personal. When you talk about Microsoft, Steve says that. We do.
Well, it seems to me that, look, you know, there's a misinterpretation going on. Basically, on the one hand, we're using Steve Jobs as a sort of literary device, and that's fun. And, you know, in the same way that we use Steve Ballmer as a cartoon character, you know, which he almost is. I mean, all he needs is a cape, really, and he could be a cartoon character. But the thing I found, which is kind of, I mean, I'm not wild about the Mac App Store, and I think the other problem is the fact that it might potentially become a default. This is where the problem for the user is that it might become a default, and it wouldn't be possible, there may be nothing stopping you from getting apps from outside of the App Store. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to use the App Store, it might reach the point where the only way you can get upgrades for software you've already got is to go through the App Store.
Who said anything about upgrades? How do you know you're going to have upgrades through the App Store?
Well, that's another problem itself. But
that is the whole point. I mean, are you going to be in Mac releases, iLife 09, iLife 11, are you going to be releasing apps with, like, you know, app name 10, app name 11, app name 12? You know,
I don't understand. You think that is an interesting detail to ask generally at all. Those are Mac specific questions.
But if you're going to be talking about the whole thing about is the Mac closed, I think you're missing the whole point about when it's at the moment you have an installed base of Mac users who get their software from the developers directly or through other sites, but essentially they look for it themselves, they hear about it themselves, and they through word of mouth they go find it.
And the thing,
but you're going to suddenly have driven by the success of the phone app stores, which is successful because, you know, other platforms are taking on the same idea of having application stores built into their site.
No, but in a different way. Android is open.
There's still a gateway.
Forget the gateway. There's
a place to go and get it. There is a single place you go and get it. You know, you used to be able to go to a high street and get your bakers, your fishmongers, your butchers. Now you go to Tesco's. You know, it's one place where you get it all. And that's probably a bad argument because there is a drop in quality. But that's not what I'm getting at. You've got a current installed base that knows how to get software, but you also have a much wider group of people who don't do this, who don't buy much software above and beyond what they really need to get for work. You know, they'll buy Office over, you know, because that's what people use. They'll buy the odd large program that someone tells them how to buy, but they won't buy a lot of the small apps that developers are developing and other people are buying. You know, they're buying enough to keep small software developers in business. What you're going to have is you're going to have a much larger group of people who suddenly know about the vast amount of software that is available for the Mac, the choice of software that's available for the Mac for doing different things, in the same way as they're finding the amount of software on the iPhone. So in that sense, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for developers to make money, for Apple to make money, and for users to find software in an easier way. You'll still have people who, like me, like Tom, who know how to find their own software, and they'll still be able to get their own software and install it.
These are bollocks. I'm telling you, bollocks, man.
Why?
Steve Jobs, Apple, whoever, right? They've been saying over and again, you know, about, you know, trusted software and, you know, trust us. You know, we know what we're doing. You know, we know exactly how to make your Mac run smoothly, all this stuff.
And they do.
This is coming to OS X, you know, at some point in the future. We all know it. You know, and whatever you say, you know, no matter what, you know, these small minority of people that say, oh, yeah, but I want to run, you know, Office or whatever, yeah.
You can run Office on the Mac?
Yeah, Microsoft will do a deal with Apple, and they'll put it in the App Store, you know, and all these other things, you know.
Well, Ian.
You can run Open Office on the Mac?
But it's coming.
Ian, the whole point in the argument about the App Store is the point that, you know, the two applications which everyone always cites as saying these probably won't end up in the App Store are Microsoft Office and Adobe Creative Suite and the various components thereof. You know, they're saying that, you know, if Microsoft and Adobe are making plenty of money selling, you know, Office and CS, why would they want to give 30% of that to Apple? Now, for small developers, you know, independent...
Oh, but that's such a bullshit, stupid way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's just such a... See, there's two things going on here. First of all, there is the question of access to apps, right, which Abiza has put the case very eloquently, I think.
Thank you. There
are benefits to the Mac App Store for developers, and they are this, right? But the App Store is also, it's not just about that. It is partly about that, clearly. But it's not just about that. Partly it's about an increased control from Apple's point of view. But saying that, oh, well, Adobe's never going to go into the Apple Store, what would they pay the 30%? Well, obviously they wouldn't have to. I mean, I find that offensive in its stupidity. Why would Adobe pay 30%? Why would any big corp that has a partnership deal?
Well, yeah, they could negotiate.
You know, they would negotiate, obviously. Yeah. And well, they make from a point where Apple say, sorry, you've got to go into the store because we want this to be the gateway. One, because we want to control access to our platform. We don't want people to be using Google to find our apps. Thank you very much.
That's possibly true. That's very likely true. However, if Adobe was on the Apple App Store, on the Mac App Store, you'd probably find that users would certainly have a much better time installing the software than they are at the moment.
That's not hard, but... Yeah.
Well, that's
hard. You know, using the standard pack. This stuff is important.
It's really angry. That's what makes me really angry, right? That stuff isn't important to having some degree of freedom. The speed of the install or the relative ease of the install. Anybody can write a new installer.
Yeah,
there's an installer. But if you've got, then looking at, I think there's a much larger discussion that we said we weren't going to have on the show, but you,
hello?
It's a major point. Yep. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Everything went a bit bonkers for a second.
Okay,
but...
sorry. No, I think this is an important point, and I'll probably get back to him. But the idea is that Steve, I said it now. Apple, yes, would like to control the whole experience of people using Macs and their applications. They'd like to do it. I know you're going to disagree with me, but they'd like to do it because it makes life easier for users. If a user can go to an app store and download and find software and download it and know that A, it's not going to shotgun stuff all over their hard drives. B, it's reasonably bug free. It's not going to bring up a whole load of license things. It's not going to require software that to already be installed in your computer for it to be able to use. I mean, that bites me in the backside because I'm using an app that's I'm writing a third party app. So I'm not going to be in the app store myself, but you know, I've got ideas for other things I'd like to put in the app store. In terms of a user who wants to be able to just turn their computer on and use it and get on with what else they want to do apart from just sitting in front of the computer. That's a freedom that I think you're missing out on. That's their freedom. Their freedom not to have to talk tech or talk to geeks all the time.
Like the freedom of not being threatened by terrorists.
It's more of an important part of who do we decide on to protect from terrorists? We devolve that to something else.
This is the thing. When I first heard about the Mac App Store, I thought, well, you know what? Ubuntu's got its own, App Store type thing anyway, you know? And the problem with that, but the difference is that...
No, these days it's called the Ubuntu Software Center.
Which is that good.
The difference is that, you know, that has a very open, process where you can join it and anyone can join it and it isn't dictated by one person or a group of people who say that, you know, the software is not allowed in this thing. You know, that's an open democratic process, yeah? And that's fine. You know, the difference is that with the App Store is that it's basically Apple's way or no way, and that's a problem.
And what's the baseline for quality on this Linux store? If anyone can put their stuff on there, you're saying everything on there works?
No, it isn't. It's judged by the maintainers of the repositories.
So there are some people who control it.
Yeah.
So it's not completely open.
No, that's not true.
It's open not, in the sense where anyone can put it in and they still get reviewed.
There are rules that govern the Mac App Store.
Yeah.
Because the nature of the rules is completely different. Because you're being disingenuous.
I'm not being disingenuous. I know the difference.
Let me finish my point. I believe you are being disingenuous if you claim that dpackage is the same as the Apple Mac Store. That is disingenuous because they're not.
I think he's claiming that, you know, the Ubuntu package repository, which comes set by default on an Ubuntu machine, and same with the Debian packet repository, you know, all the various repositories that come set by default, you can add your own repositories, sure.
Because that's totally uncomparable or incomparable even, because the package repositories are relatively trivially configurable. So, yeah, okay, they're not default, but it is relatively trivial to change them.
Are they?
Definitely.
Sources.list is, you know...
I've got Opera.
No, you don't need to use sources.list.
Mm.
Good front ends control access to that. They allow you to update the sources, right?
Yeah.
and therefore, somebody can go, okay, there isn't perhaps there isn't the degree of metadata around those package stores that there could be. But, you know, this is one of the reasons that it frustrates me, all of this. So you're claiming that the Mac App Store rules are the same as Dpackage, which is really...
No,
really
it's not.
So I'm saying, what I'm saying is the Mac App Store has rules. I mean, there may not be rules that you agree
with.
Yeah, but that's like saying Nazi Germany.
What do you expect? Oh, come on, then let me call Godwin on you.
No, come on.
No, but seriously, not only that, but you're talking. You're making.
It's like saying physics and have rules.
Let me close this argument off. If you think I'm sitting here saying that I don't have a niggling worry that the Mac is going to become a closed platform, you're wrong. I do have that worry, and other people as well have that worry. Of course, we have that worry because we are just as cautious about the whole corporate and Apple thing as everyone else.
Well, you shit my pants last year.
Well, I'm not, and we're not. There's people who are absolutely embracing this whole idea with cautious optimism. They're not sure how it's going to work. I don't know how it's going to work. You don't know how it's going to work. And
I've got a good idea by the past experience of Apple.
The iPhone App Store is very popular.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, and lots of people are buying software on it.
The problem I have with that... The problem I have with that is that since there's no alternative on the iPhone, there's no point of comparison.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with the Mac App Store is the fact that, until Apple hypothetically, cut off other ways of installing applications, which, then we will actually be able to see a market of App Store versus getting stuff off the internet. Which we may already be seeing with Android.
What Apple basically proposed is something similar to the Android kind of App Store, where you can still install stuff yourself,
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing. If that's true, I believe it's true, then you look at what Steve Jobs says about the Android marketplace and how annoyed he is at it and how...
There's a difference there. What Steve Jobs is saying in that...
What Steve Jobs said is
that the problem with Android is the lack of vertical integration. This isn't an issue, which is an issue solely with mobile devices. It's the fact that you have, applications which are written for devices which are touch only, and applications which are written for devices which have other controls.
Different screen resolutions, different screen sizes. What Steve is talking about is a fragmentation of the market.
Just like a laptop,
But on a laptop, you have the same set of controls. You have the same set of controls, whether you're on a MacBook Pro or, the new teeny weeny MacBook Air, or on a, or roughly the same as if you have it on a desktop. The difference between a trackpad and a mouse is really not that big of a difference. The difference between a full-size keyboard and a laptop keyboard isn't so big compared to the difference between a touchscreen keyboard and a physical keyboard, or any of the other things which there is a problem with. There is a specific problem on the mobile. You have to really, tailor the experience to the specific device, which, is less of an issue on the desktop.
The desktop code is more complicated than mobile code. So, you handle it differently.
Yeah.
I'm not here trying to persuade you, because it's not something I can persuade you about one way or the other.
You are, in the back of your mind, you are worried that something...
Of course I'm worried, but I'm not worried to the extent where I have to, you prepare for the worst and hope for the best. I have a skill set which I'm trying to expand and broaden. Yeah.
And also, if you are a Mac developer and you are doing that commercially, it's not like, me or Nick or Ian, where we can just say, we're not in that realm, so that's not a concern for us. If we don't like it, if in my situation, yeah. I don't like it, I can bugger off to Linux. If you're an Objective-C developer and you're working in the Cocoa platform and on the Mac, you've got to suck it up and deal with it.
Yeah,
it's a business decision, and you either say, I'm going to make money out of it, I'm going to do it, or, capitalism has to rule in that situation.
Yeah, no, so, obviously, yes, I'm a Mac developer, so in case people don't know, so that I obviously have a particular viewpoint of this. I just don't think that...
It would be interesting to know. Are you planning to, based on... based on the discussion you had last week at the NS Code Night meetup about this, what was the general opinion? Were people, going to rush into doing stuff on the App Store?
All the questions I mentioned were some that we were all talking about. We didn't have answers for.
Right.
The general mood was cautious optimism. We think it's a good opportunity, but we don't have any details. We don't know what we're going to do about it. There are some large software shops that have already committed to getting their stuff on the App Store for opening.
I saw Pixelmator and Omni Group,
Real Mac Software down in Brighton. Real Mac.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's... I know a couple of other companies, but I'm not sure if they've made it public yet, so I'm not going to say. But yeah, they're certainly shifting. And these are companies with established apps.
Yeah.
Who have established users and upgrade paths and a history. Yeah. And they are thinking about moving into it. And, they're coming up with ideas like, well, okay, if it's exclusive and you can't give upgrades, we're going to give all current users version 2 upgrades, and we'll give them version 2 for free and see where it goes from there. We'll adjust our pricing according to what we think is going to happen. But, these are slightly more pragmatic, hard-headed decisions that we have to make rather than on general sort of principle of, oh, it's going to be closed. It's not going to be closed now. It's not going to be closed in line. And that gives us, at least 3 years to see what's happening. And to be honest, this isn't a personal insult, Ian, so don't take it the wrong way. My first Tech Grumps when I came on, you absolutely railed about the Apple TV and how, my God, they were going to buy apps on it. It was going to be a terrible thing. And this was a week before the announcement. And there weren't any apps on the Apple TV. Just railing about these things. I know it's something to be worried about and the overview, but just railing about these things without seeing exactly where it's going, without seeing what the details are, without seeing people who are actually having to deal with these questions more than just a philosophical basis of, oh, it's open, it's closed, what are we going to do about it? And we're a major part of the ecosystem of the Apple system because, like any software platform, like any computing platform, it's the software that counts. Apple wants to sell you the computer. They sell you Xcode. You get Xcode for free. You get the operating system is a side issue. What Apple sells, they sell the computer. If you're not having the software to put on the computer, if you're not having people who are willing to buy it because they can get things to do what they want to do with their life and do the other things that they're interested in, they're not going to sell the computers.
Yep.
The idea about that you're getting the restriction of choice with what software you can run and what you can and can't do with your computer. Yes, these are important questions, but at the moment they're not questions that come up on the Mac. They come up on the iPhone, but then the iPhone was never an open system to start with. It's not like it has any legacy to go back to. It is a closed system, and that's the way it went out. The iPad, a closed system, that's the way it goes out. This is an open BSD Linux based system, and if they lose the software developers for it, if they lose the large universities that use this, who develop their own software to use it, if they lose the companies that develop their own custom software and to run on these systems, they're losing out on a whole lot of they're losing out on customers, and there are people who they want to sell computers to. So there are reasons why it's unlikely that in the short term, in the term of economic horizons that we look to, that it's not going to go closed. And that's my point of view on it, general point of view.
I mean, I'm doing much the same thing. I mean, I'm saying, well, this is partly why I'm looking at trying out a. I've been trying out PyGTK today with a view to building some GUI applications on Linux. With the intention that I can have an application, I can rebuild the few applications I am using on the Mac that are that there aren't already good cross-platform alternatives for.
Okay.
That's kind of my thing, and that's it. You know, I'm doing it purely on the same basis.
But Tom, say tomorrow the Mac becomes a closed system. Tomorrow it becomes a closed system. What are you going to do?
What do you mean? Do you mean they're going to lock down my actual physical Mac?
No, they're suddenly going to say you can't get software apart from the App Store. It's not going to make any difference to you whatsoever because you have what you have on your computer already. So it's not like you have to do something straight away. You know, it's not like they're going to turn the switch off on you right away.
No, I mean, the few applications I'm interested in porting, you know, have been bugging me for a long time because one of them in particular is a piece of shareware which hasn't been updated and is written by some German dude who doesn't answer emails anymore. You know,
Even if the system goes closed, you still have the hardware. You know, it's not like that he's going to come and take your computer away. He's not going to come and take your current install away and your current applications away. Mm. So, you know, it's
and I have an iOS 10.5 DVD and the ability to install it on Hackintoshes
on anything. Yeah, and you know, Apple only worry about that. Not so much in the case that you're pirating their software, but in the case of they may or may not be losing a sale to you of some hardware. Mm. But in the long run, they know that if you use the Mac and you know, not all of it works exactly on a Hackintosh as it should work, you might think, maybe I do want to buy a Mac. Maybe I'll just buy a Mac Mini to go, you know, it's all about selling the product. And they sell the product by having it, a bigger argument, but having it easy to use and user-friendly. And when they say it just works, it just does.
Abiza, okay. I sat here and bit my tongue for long enough.
Go on.
Okay, so just on the point about what we talked about with the App Store on the Apple TV, you know, it's not about what exactly happens or what's announced. It's about the intention and the trajectory of what's going to happen. You know, me and Nick can see the day when it will happen. They'll say, "Oh, actually, you know, our apps are the best. We've got enough partners in the App Store. We can turn off the ability to allow you to install your own software." You know, we can see that day coming. You know, and even deep down, you probably can see that day coming as well. The current trajectory and the current stance of Apple. You know, if you don't see that trajectory, then I have to really question,
I haven't discounted it. But you know, it's only a possibility. Yeah, it's not an absolute certainty.
They haven't said you're on borrowed time then.
Are we? But we don't know what's going to happen. So why is anything on borrowed time?
If it's not going to happen, then it's, you know, then you can't see the day of it happening because it's not going to happen.
But looking at the trends and going, right, this is this, that, the other, this adds to 5, you know, so obviously at some point we're going to get to 10, you know, and I can definitely see that kind of heading in that direction, you know.
But it's, I'm concerned about it, but I just can't see that you can automatically say it's going to happen. I mean, we're not
psychics. There's other directions it could go with this.
Fair enough. We're making a guess that it will probably happen. But
Ian, what are you suggesting?
What me and Nick were laughing to ourselves is because, you know, even...
because it was funny.
You know, a step in that direction proves that we're not complete and utter loons. You know, and actually this stuff does matter, and it is heading in that direction.
If you couldn't see the App Store coming, you were blinding yourself. If you couldn't see the fact that they were making a shed load of money on having a curated infrastructure for people to buy apps easily, you're blinded. You know, you're deluding yourself. It was always going to come. The shock of it is it's come a lot sooner than we expected. The shock of it is that the opportunity of it has come a lot sooner than we expected before a lot of people are able to do stuff with it. I mean, it's open in 90 days. Do you know how big a bigger thing it is to have your app available on day one in the Mac App Store when people are going to be jumping on and thinking, ooh, what can I get?
Mm.
You know, it's that's part of what drives it. And yeah, okay, so something might happen in 3 or 4 years down the line, but you know, what's going to happen to computing in about 3 or 4 years down the line?
Wait. Oh, you just said just a minute ago.
Yeah.
That you weren't expecting the App Store to come out so quick, right? And then you say later on, in about 3 or 4 years later, wait a minute. So actually, you never know. It could be in the next 2 years. It could be next year.
It's not going to be in line. Yeah. It's not going to be in line. And line's going to be around for 2 years, the same way Snow Leopard was around for 2 years. So that's 3 years at least.
Ian, I was
3 years at least before any major changes to the platform.
Ian, I was listening to a talk the other day from somebody who was talking about the probability of whether or not meteors are going to hit the Earth. Yes, mm-hmm. You know, these things could happen. You know, yes, sort of.
Oh, Morris, that's patronising bullshit. Fuck off.
No, I'm just saying the point isn't that I'm not comparing the probabilities. I'm saying you can only deal with the world you currently live in. And you can only make practical decisions based thereon. I mean, you know, you have to remember, you know, what decision could people make differently? You know, could they suddenly say, oh, well, that's Steve Jobs. He's a nasty character. I'm going to move everything over to Ubuntu. No, it's not going to happen. You know,
I know the decision that If you were to say the Mac is going to be a closed down lockdown system, you know, that you're trying to say is the obvious choice is it's going to be closed. Get out now. Yeah,
that is definitely what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah, no, I know that's what you're saying, but look at it from the other point of view of people who buy the computer and use them. They say I can get everything I need to do off the Mac App Store. I don't care if it's closed.
Okay, so let me.
Hardware is already going to take a route, and then a few years down the line, even harder to make.
Sorry, Ian. Sorry, I didn't hear any of that. Can I jump in?
I had a Windows machine, and I believe that like everything I did, and the apps that I installed and stuff like that, I couldn't imagine not having them. And then luckily, I was able to switch, and it was a hard process, but it was a lot easier than leaving it until 5 years down the line. You know.
Wait a second, because I think that we're talking at all sorts of cross purposes here. So I'm going to state really clearly what I think. I think that the app stores, gatewayed app stores, with rather qualitative rules about things that aren't testable, are bad for developers. Full stop. Yeah. And something that is bad for developers is, in the end, bad for users. Microsoft showed that the way you build something that beats the pants off everything else. Let's go back to the night. You know, I forget on a previous show, somebody ticked me off for this. I think it was Cristiano who ticked me off for going back to the 1980s and said it was irrelevant. But it's very, very relevant. You go back to the 1980s and look how Microsoft dominated. They did it by giving developers exactly the best environment for developing software on. Now, what Apple are doing is giving... What?
Nothing. Carry on. Sorry. I wasn't laughing at that. I wasn't laughing at your point. I was laughing at something else. So you said, carry on.
They're giving... So what Apple are doing is being very user-focused and saying, we're going to give users the best experience, and we'll do whatever we have to do to developers to make that work. In essence, it's what Ant was saying last week and what MeWare was saying last week. They don't consider this, you know, you keep talking about a computer, and it isn't a computer. It's an Apple product.
That's bollocks.
And it's It is not bollocks.
I can do everything on my machine here that you can do on yours. So why is that not a computer?
Because it's an Apple computer.
But it does everything that yours can do. Why does that make it not a computer?
No, it doesn't.
What can you do to yours that I can't do to mine?
I can change apart from
window. Modify your...
I can change my graphical... Well, okay, so when I tell you something, Ibiza, you say that doesn't matter.
So yeah, because
how can we have
how does changing your windowing environment it might improve? How is that going to help a user? How is that going to help?
Oh my God! Right. No. Hold on a minute.
Apart from being able to buy a Hannah Montana,
do you think just because it is the way that it is right now that something better won't come along? If look at the whole Alta Vista Google thing. Everyone thought the search engines were done. Why would you want to change from Alta Vista? Because everything you needed to do. Well, I'm sorry, but Google came along, blew it out of the water.
But anyway, can I please get back to my point? Because I was totally derailed, right? Developers building a gateway which includes qualitative rules which aren't testable is bad for developers, and developers are the reasons that users use computers, and that's it. And that's what he's doing. Now, if you don't agree with that, and you say no, it's okay to work in these fudgy areas where I can submit an app and it can be pulled randomly because suddenly they decided that they didn't like me, then fine. But I think you're mad living in that. I mean, some people like living in crocodile-infested swamps. And that's fine. I don't understand them. But nonetheless, they enjoy it. The sense of danger, I don't know. But that's what you've got here. You've got a situation where there are qualitative tests that you can't write automated testing for. You cannot say, yep, definitely I'm going to pass here. No. Unlike with the free software stores, right? That's the difference. They can just say, we don't like you. I believe
The only example that we have of it so far is the Apple, is the phone app store, which, although it might have hurt some developers, not all developers, it hurt some in some very high profile manners, it hasn't affected the popularity of the iPhone. It hasn't affected the popularity of the iPhone.
How do we measure that? Do we,
The fact that you still have to queue up to get one, has it affected the popularity of the iPad, which...
It hasn't done any damage because people still queue up.
People still want them. People still want to use them.
That's qualitative evidence that it hasn't done any damage.
It's qualitative evidence from a different point of view. I do think that... I've said this before. I think that the whole focus of Apple and their product is pushed towards the user. The whole idea of the software tools you get, the guidance you get, the documentation you get to use Apple software is to push it is purely on making things easier for the user. It's not about making life easier for the developer. It's a heretical statement.
And I find that disingenuous as well.
Even within there are developers in the Apple ecosystem who have been, who've sort of got disgusted with the whole idea that people aren't pushing for more openness out of Apple, etc. And there's a seductive thing about, well, you write stuff for the Apple iPhone, you write stuff for the Apple the Apple ecosystem, you can make money out of it, and that's not something to be ignored.
So it comes down to this. It comes down to this that Steve and those who and there are enough people who believe that there are things that you can do that make the user's experience better that constrain developers more. And
well, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do as a developer? What are you trying to do as a developer? You're trying to make something that somebody will find useful and pay you for.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a definite... It may not be your definition of what a developer is or a hacker is, but it's a definition of a developer who wants to make something that's useful, that's beautiful, that's functional, that's elegant, that a user will be able to use and save enough time...
That's an Apple definition. You included the words beautiful there.
And what's wrong with that?
With this assertion that users want beautiful all the time.
And if you think users don't like software...
I don't want ugly...
And if you think users don't buy software based on their perceived beauty or the perceived elegance of the software, then you're blinkering yourself as well.
Listen, it's about empowering the user.
It's not about making beautiful software. It's about empowering the user.
Okay, and people don't want to be empowered by looking at beautiful things?
No, listen. The reason I raised it was because you included it in your list of important things, and it's not an important thing.
It is for
a very small minority of users, right? What users care most about is that it works, and we can show this over and over again by looking at all the ugly, crappy applications that users still use.
Yeah, such as?
BBA.
Sorry, what?
VBA.
VBA?
Office, Excel, Word, PowerPoint.
Yeah, which Microsoft
has ever been written.
And what do you have on the Mac? You've got TextMate, which you may not like or whatever. Well, but that
TextMate over
people
Office.
Love TextMate.
What, over Office?
Not over Office, but people like iWork over Office.
Yeah, I think that's part of the point, is the fact that for a lot of people, you know, and I'm going to be, you know, going, I'm on a visa, I'm with a visa on this. A lot of people,
thank you.
You know, a lot of people, they have put up with fucking shitty software for a very long time, and then they buy a Mac and they see, actually, no, it doesn't have to be like this. And one of the things which, you know, that the Ubuntu people are pushing really, really hard is to make it so that there is, you know, a consistent, good graphical experience out of the box.
But you can do that without, you know, owning the whole platform.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you do, but I'm. Let me say there is, you know, there is one very, very good thing about the you know, on the Mac side, which is that a lot of shit gets done in terms of, you know, because Apple do have this, you know, dictatorial jackbooted control, you know, lay on the words as thick as you like. A lot of shit which, you know, is old and broken and probably needs to go away, goes away a hell of a lot quicker on the Mac platform than it does on other platforms. It, you know, it's just undeniable. You know,
what about iTunes? What about the Apple
Mac? I don't see any problem with iTunes, but
what?
Yeah, right.
I see
iTunes. Yourself, man.
You were on it about 6 weeks ago ranting about it.
Well, no, I'm a bit annoyed about some of the visual changes in iTunes, but in general, I think iTunes is actually pretty good. But, you know, a lot of people say, oh, iTunes has got this broken user experience. They never quite explain how or why. And it seems actually okay with me. But things like, for instance, really fucking
Listeners, you decide. So go back through the archives, find Tom's rant about iTunes, about how he went on for about half an hour, wasting my life, clearly, because he doesn't actually believe that iTunes is that bad at all. He actually quite likes it. So you decide who he's going to listen to. Are you going to listen to people with integrity who stand for the same things every week? Week after week, we come here saying the same thing over and over again. Or are you going to vote for someone who said he would never buy an iPad and then went out and got one? Now, I ask,
as Stephen Colbert
who
says,
would you rather in charge of your tech grumps?
I haven't got that.
Stephen
Colbert
fight them on the beaches.
Stephen Colbert said it best. The great thing about President Bush is that he believes the same thing on Monday as he believes on Wednesday, regardless of what happened on Tuesday. But no, I mean, things. I'm not shilling for Apple here, but things like the fact that they've, you know, they were pretty much the first company to sell computers, which moved on from BIOS, which, you know, and moving over to EFI and having really fucking fast boot up, which is a nice thing to have. And, you know, the reason they could do that is because they have complete control of the whole platform. Doesn't justify it, if there are very good reasons, you know, but things like that, and that's only now just being adopted, How long have we had an EFI on the Mac platform? Pretty much since the Intel, exactly. Since Intel, maybe even, since they switched over to Intel, they've been using EFI. And now Intel and the other chip and motherboard manufacturers have agreed to UEFI, which is a standardized version of EFI. Finally. And, it's that kind of thing has prompted everyone to get their arse in gear and make it so it doesn't take 5 minutes to boot a fucking laptop, and to actually have fast boot ups. Things like getting rid of the floppy drive, things like USB, things like Wi-Fi, all these various things which,
doing away with the floppy.
Yeah.
And they're going to do away with the optical drive.
Not a lot about that, but,
exactly. They're going to do away with the optical drive. It's, I said it earlier on today. I bet you the next iteration of OS X is going to come on a USB stick.
Well, it already is if you get a MacBook Air, doesn't it?
It is if you come on a MacBook Air, but the new one's going to come. Well, obviously, how are you going to update your MacBook Airs?
Do you not see that? This is all coming from, a small group of people in Apple that dictate to everyone else, you don't need an optical drive, We don't need optical drives. We're cool,
Ian, the same argument was made back in 1997... Toppies. About serial ports and parallel ports. Everyone's like, this Macintosh only comes with USB. However, are we going to live without, our COM ports and our LPT ports?
Well, some people are stuck without those things.
Some people are stuck without those things, yeah.
I know, exactly. But the point is that you
can't ever say that Apple aren't scared of breaking backwards compatibility, because I have that. And they've shat on developers in the past. They've shat on Carbon developers. Well, not shat on them, but they warned them that, Carbon was going out. Move to Cocoa, and if you look at some of the old mailing lists that you come across sometimes, the Carbon developers are talking about, we're at Cocoa. I've got a whole load of expertise in Carbon I'm going to lose.
And in 5 years' time, the only application that isn't written in Cocoa will still be iTunes.
Yeah, and the Finder, but...
No, but I'm not... None of this justifies Apple, being dictatorial or controlling or the App Store, but all I'm saying is there are a hell of a lot of benefits from it. And
to users.
No. You, what you're saying is...
These things fuck developers.
I've already clarified this.
But I'm not just a developer. I'm a user. I use a computer. And these things make life easy for me. Sorry, carry on, Nick. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
No, carry on. I forget.
I've already said very clearly what I think is the difference. And I don't you've said nothing that has contradicted that.
I don't think I'll ever be able to. And you're not the person I'm trying to convince about this, because it's not. I understand your point of view that as a developer you should have the freedom to do what you want to your system. As a developer,
No. That's not quite my point. My point is that as a user,
it's one of your point.
I want the developers on the system that I use to have the freedom to do what I want.
Okay, but my premise is that there are a lot of users who don't give a crap. They just want to use software.
Well, the flip side of that is that if you're using a platform, you want people to build software in the best way possible. You don't want to force it on them. It's in the same way that if you live in a democracy, you don't necessarily want people to be, Nazi thugs, going around being racists or whatever. You live in a democracy and you can't enforce your views on everybody, and freedom is great and blah, 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 blah. But there is, benefits from, what I'm saying.
Oh, Tom, come on.
You're trying
to use these arguments. Are you trying to practice philosophical... argument skills on us, because this is such bullshit.
Yeah.
You're trying to compare democracy with Apple, where you've got one man controlling in a very commanding way. And then in a democratic environment where everyone has a chance in agreeing what the rules are.
I think that was my very point.
If Apple said, everyone with an Apple computer gets to decide on the policies that govern the App Store, and we'll organise a democratic system.
Why?
We'll all get to.
No, I was saying exactly the opposite. I wasn't comparing Apple with a democracy at all. I was saying that, you know, the point is that, you know, if you live in a fascist society and you're not the one who's, you know, being put on the trains off to the death camps, things are pretty damn good. There are some real advantages.
And to carry the analogy forward, they're not. Because the point about that is the randomness and the lack of rule of law. And that's exactly what I'm saying is happening here.
Oh, yeah.
There is a rule of law, so developers are completely exposed. They can write a piece of software, get it onto the Mac App Store, and the next day they can pull it away. Or you can make a ton of money, and the next day they can pull it away. And
for no reason, just because they
saw it. Reason, just because they don't like you.
Just because they
decided it would be good to do that.
I can't walk into Tesco's and buy Big Jugs Monthly. You know, they're not going to sell it to me.
Exactly.
You know, they might sell it one week, and then the manager comes in and says, we're not selling it the next week. And Big Jugs Monthly, I'm going to say, damn, I was going to be getting good sales out of that bloody store. Never mind, I'll sell it around the local Lidl.
No, the difference here is that there's only one store. That's the difference.
Yeah, but it's not only one store. Yes, there is only one store on the bloody iPhone, but there's not only one store for the Mac.
Right, but Abisa, we're saying clearly that we believe.
It's coming that the Mac is going to be a lockdown platform, and you can only get the software that Apple says you can have on it.
Right. And obviously, we're going around circles now, aren't we?
Yeah. Shall we move on? Because we've been talking about this for almost an hour now. So, and I don't think anyone's going to change anyone's mind. And I think everyone's pretty clear on what everyone believes. So I'm going to take the prerogative and say, next! As Ian frequently does.
I think what we should say is that we're banging on about all of this stuff. And we try and pull people in. Certainly, Abisa has come in from the outside, from the original three of us, and Abisa comes on and really represents that Mac position really strongly. And I think that's great that we air these views more. So, and obviously, we had Ant on last week, and we've had Cristiano on previously, who's kind of similarly to Abisa. And I would just love more people to step up and say, look, I'd like to come on and give my opinion about all of this. I have a strong opinion, or you know, I don't, or I think you guys are nuts for talking about it.
I agree. It's not up to me. As I said, I'm not here to try and persuade you. I mean, it's really down to people who are listening to make up their own minds.
Exactly.
Mac users, Mac developers, you're welcome to become Christians in the Linux Roman Emporium.
Actually, once somebody at the NS Codonite said he'd listen to us on Tech Grumps, so you do have listeners in the Mac community.
Yeah, and I would really like more people. I hope that people don't feel that they're just going to get roasted.
Can I just say that none of this is personal? All of you now, and I do like you all.
I fucking hate you. Anyway.
Right, let's move on. Nick, I hear you have something you wish to discuss.
Well, this is about product, which I think is kind of linked, and I'm not sure it's a good idea to talk about it right now. But
No, go ahead.
Well, I was reading today about the number one or the number two, but fast approaching number one ISP in France, which is a company called Free.fr. Mm. And the reason they're number one is because they offer really, really decent bandwidth for very low cost. They have one package which they give to everybody. It's very, very reasonably priced, extremely competitively priced, and speeds at 20 megabits are fairly common. So their churn rate on their customer base is 0.01%.
That's not a lot.
That suggests that there's only people who are dying who who a customer's lost. And one of the interesting things that they're saying at Free.fr is that enables them to do this stuff is that they don't have any marketing managers. None. And the reason they don't have any marketing managers is so that they don't dream up any more products. Because the job of a marketing manager is to dream up products that you could sell to consumers. And Free.fr don't really believe in that. They just have one product and no marketing managers. But they still do advertising and stuff. But they don't need marketing managers for that. They don't need to position a product because they only have one. So they just advertise that. People buy it. It seems to be an extremely successful company. And I was thinking about this, and a number of people have asked me to talk about product on Tech Grumps. And I was thinking about this idea and how frustrating it is. And it comes round again to the idea of just build things. Can you just build things? And how much of an overhead we have right now in people who are not willing or able, I'm not sure which it is, and obviously it varies, not willing or able to actually build things. So instead of doing that, they become marketing managers and they invent product. And they become, in effect, a layer of complete waste and inefficiency on people just building things. And it seems terribly romantic and like the sort of thing that Tony Benn or Gandhi might say. But I'm beginning to really think that those people are, you know, like the people on the ship going to Earth in the Douglas Adams story. Well, telephone sanitizers and hairdressers. And yeah, we just don't need them. So I think I think the reason they're so frustrating is because they're fucking everywhere. And I've said to a number of people, you know, I don't really believe in marketing. And they chortle to me. And then they try and sidle away. When they realise I'm telling the truth, they sidle away. Oh, he's a bit mad, isn't he? But I don't. I think it's bullshit. And I think it's mostly the result I see is ever more complicated products that users find more and more difficult to get on with, and ever more complicated design, because you have to convince the users of the right user experience for your product. And I think most of the time users just want the thing, and a lot less product would go a long way.
Did you see did you see Zed Shaw's post about this a while back? He wrote a thing called Products for People Who Make Products for People, and he was ranting about the same thing, saying, you know, he said that, you know, actually I'll read you just a little bit, it's quite funny actually. I have several friends who are, quote, product people. Their self-proclaimed definition as a product person is that they focus on the user experience of everything they make and could care less, that's American for couldn't care less, about the back end.
Oh, God, don't get me started on that one.
To them, the entire purpose of software is a magic show whereby a programmer creates the perception of quality through graphic design, regardless of the actual quality held within. To the product person, I am a dinosaur. I'm a long beard. I'm a guy who makes web servers for fun and gives them away for free. First, the fact that I actually know how to make a web server just boggles their mind. I might as well tell them that I can make a Jeep Cherokee from raw iron ore. The reaction is about the same. Second, to them, a web server isn't, quote, product, it's infrastructure. It's not even a toilet, it's the rusty pipe that feeds water to the toilet. To a product person, the things I make are laughable. They aren't products because people don't use them, only programmers. To make a good web server, you just have to code. There's no design, no usability, no human elements at all. The all-superior product has design, usability, and is used by humans. Your web server is just used by geeks, and it's just code. The crux of the product person's belief system is this idea that unless the product has a graphic component, then it's not a product and it has no elements of usability. If it's not a product, then it's looked down on and it's not worth their time. It's obviously a stupid idea. And then he goes on to say that that he thinks that he basically says that it's the product people have the attitude that if you let geeks be in charge, then it's like the inmates running the asylum, and that they need to come in and civilize the geeks and make all their stuff usable and marketable and, you know, and normal people friendly.
It's just another group of people who are trying to put themselves between the producers and the consumers.
It depends on your business model. It depends what you're producing. I mean, if you're an internet service provider, what services are you going to offer? You know, you want people to. All you really want to do is make sure your infrastructure. You know, what this person is saying is it doesn't really work. You know, but you want to make sure your infrastructure is solid. That's all you need to do. Your marketing is basically telling people how good your infrastructure is. But the idea is to get infrastructure working. A web server, is that a product? It is a product. It just has a very specialized user base. And the sort of people that use it don't really need a graphical front end. They should be technical enough to know how to configure it, whatever. You know, I think the trouble comes from when you try and market something market the wrong thing to the wrong person. That's not marketing. That's just cold calling and bad selling. That's just being under your pressure.
No, you see, we're not talking about that.
What you're saying is that you're getting somebody between the producer and an end user, but. You know, what is a product is dependent on exactly what you're making.
Because you've just completely discounted but the examples that I've given. Of the ISP.
Yeah.
Name another ISP that actually does what you said.
No, they don't. But
right, why don't they?
Because I choose my ISP based on price and what I can get out of it, and I found one that gives me, you know, high bandwidth.
I didn't ask that question. Why don't they do what you said?
Because it's not in their business to do so.
Why not?
Because all they're trying to do is tell you this is what we do and this is how we can do it.
Have I
missed the point?
But that's not what they do.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. That Free.fr don't have any differentiated products. They have one product because that's what they do. And that's how they do it, right?
Yeah, but other companies...
Name another ISP who does that.
I don't know, because my ISP has different... Even my ISP has different prices for different products.
And they have a marketing manager to define them.
Yeah, but that's just the title. It's, you know, you can call someone a senior vice president of sales. And
yeah, surely the difference is that if you have a marketing manager, you go to the site and it's, you know, ADSL Max 2000 to the extreme with, you know, 17 bells on top. And if you go to it's just based on the fact that in this country we regulate DSL and all that kind of stuff differently. If the geeks were in charge, it would be called, you know, 20 gigs a month, 40 gigs a month, whatever it might be, unlimited. And they would actually mean unlimited rather than...
20 megs unlimited, 15 quid a month, thank you very much. Your point is you were saying that there's... I mean, forget the title of marketing manager, Nick. You're saying that there's a layer of bureaucracy that lives between the producer and the consumer. That's what you're decrying.
Unnecessary. Yeah. I think this was
in many companies. Yeah, I wasn't meaning that you should go and find people with marketing manager on their titles and kill them.
No,
you should go and find the marketing managers and kill them.
I find very little to object to on this point. a world free of marketing people.
I still think it depends on the product. I mean, I used to work in an insurance company, and you know, They never had marketing managers, but they had people who would, you know, try and.
Yes, they did.
What?
Anybody who comes up with product visions,
yeah,
and differentiated products and niche products and all that, those people are marketing managers. They may not.
But then there are people who wanted niche products. Then it really becomes a problem, and it's pissing people off. Don't you think?
I don't know much about insurance, so I can't say. But I would like to be able to just get a valuation for something and pay a monthly figure, and then get, you know, if the thing that I'm trying to insure breaks in the expected way, I would like to get a payout. And I know that the insurance industry doesn't often supply that particular product, despite the fact that that's what you might expect it to supply.
Yeah, but there's different types of... But then somebody dreamed up the idea of, well, rather than insuring everything in this house, let's just insure the building. So it's not building your contacts, it's just buildings. And that was somebody dreaming up a product. And is that a marketing manager?
I don't know. I don't know enough about insurance.
Yeah, but okay. I'm not trying to beat the insurance drum here. I'm just trying to say that what you're trying to say is it's a problem in some cases where you get people over egging the pudding, more or less, rather than just doing what they're supposed to do.
Can you give a different example? You've given us 3.fr and the ISP market. Is there any other examples you can think of which illustrates your level of contempt?
Well, I think there are very few, because marketing is such a, as I was just saying, I've been saying for about 10 years, I don't really believe in it. It's a nonsense, isn't it? It's mostly lies that people see through. And a lot of people just, you know, they think that's a joke. But, so marketing is really, really pervasive. And, I think it's wrong for me to say it doesn't work. It does work to a certain extent. But it is nonetheless really, really pervasive. But what I would say is, another example, is what's happening in startups at the moment. Is there's a lot of people standing back and saying, hang on, you know, just because you make an app over the weekend that can, accept, that can do chat roulette on your iPhone, that doesn't make it a product. Stop thinking like that. Just build something that's useful to someone. Stop thinking about making a product, about differentiating, about marketplace, about all of those things. Just make the fucking thing and see if people use it.
And the chips will fall where they fall.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not to say that you can't take payment for it. If the point is this stuff.
Don't build it up to be more than it is.
Yeah, so easy to do that you don't need to think like this is a product. I've got to launch it and, you know, do those kind of things.
It reminds me actually of the school technology curriculum and how that is structured in Britain. If you think about it, the technology subjects in Britain these days include everything from sort of woodwork. Stuff you do where you bang hammers around, all the way through to food and textiles and all sorts of stuff like that. And it's all focused on product design. I mean, you go and do a cookery class in a secondary school these days, and they'll ask you to design a pizza and specify who the target market are, and the marketing and all that kind of stuff. And you think, it's a fucking pizza!
Right, it's exactly right.
You get a piece of...
I blame Alan Sugar.
You throw fucking tomatoes and cheese on it and bloody, you know, bacon or whatever you want to put on top of the fucking thing, and you put it in the oven for 10 minutes. You don't need to design the fucking thing.
Exactly. This is exactly
it sounds to the kids like they're learning more. You know, what did you do today at school, Sonny? Oh, I designed the pizza. Yeah, you know, it sounds like, well, hey, you know, our kids learning marketable skill.
And I remember you had to design a sandwich. What? I mean, yes, you know, if maybe I can see, if you were McDonald's, you might have to do market research. I can understand that. But we're talking about freaking 15-year-olds. And the whole thing is just, I mean, that seems to me an example of the same thing. In certain industries, yeah, I can see you might need to do something. There is a profit motive to working out, you know, whether the sort of people who come in for McDonald's at, you know, midday are different from the people who come in at dinner time.
Nonetheless, the thing that we show over and over and over again is that you don't really know unless you test it.
Mm.
So it's only the untestable products, the untestable things, I should say, that you need to do that with.
Well, yeah, and...
Ian? Is it with us?
Ian?
Yeah, sorry.
Do you have anything to contribute?
Probably not.
You were having a nap, weren't you?
No, I was just thinking. I'm kind of drawn because I'm tall because, you know, I have a design background.
Yeah, you might be.
And I see the need for design and across the board, but, you know, I don't know. I really don't know.
And I don't think Nick's...
Design a pizza?
I don't think Nick is saying design is a bad thing, are you?
Design a pizza, right? It's actually quite interesting because, you know, I don't think it's so much the actual activity of, like, design the pizza. It's more that it's all the things that go around design that pizza, and, like, doing the market research and talking to people and critical thinking about pizzas and stuff like that that's actually quite useful.
Bollocks. The problem is that you've got a bunch of people coming out of school, you know, you've got a bunch of people who are coming out of school who can't fucking cook, myself included.
Let alone cook.
Sorry? They can't even write for, you know, and
can't fucking add, let alone cook.
Yeah. But I think that, is there a counter example to this? Apple and Microsoft, to go back to that. You know, on the one hand, you've got Windows, of which there's now, what is it, 5 different versions? Or are we still up at 7 different versions? Well, I can't remember. No. What is it? I think it's 5 now, 4 or 5 different versions of Windows, all the way from Home Basic and Home Premium Professional and Ultimate. And I think Windows 7 is down to 3. It's Home Premium, Professional and Ultimate. Is that helping? On the flip side of that, you've got Apple, who basically said, you know, when the original iPod came out, they basically said, look, you know, we need to design this thing properly. And it was a fucking huge success. So
it's a very cloudy example of what I'm talking about. I think you could have an interesting discussion about both Microsoft and Apple, but I don't think they're at all opposites in what I'm talking about. I think both have used product in different ways. And what I'm saying is, yeah, okay, maybe if you are a microcomputer manufacturer, maybe you need to think about that. Most of us aren't, though. And it's becoming, just as you've said, Tom, you know, people are coming out of school thinking about designing a pizza instead of just fucking making one. And that's nuts. And when they get to their computer, if, you know, the ones who are of a technical bent, they think about making a website product. And they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be thinking about that. I certainly don't intend it as an attack on design. I intend it as an attack on trying to design a product, trying to design a user interface is an entirely different thing. I think we spend too much time on design, or certainly on the wrong bits of design. And that's because there's this focus on the product. We're designing the product when we should be designing, you know, this page, this particular control.
It does seem a bit, things like the whole, you know, there's a sort of very precious feel about some of the stuff like the fact that, you know, there's a huge amount of focus. I was watching Mark Shuttleworth's talk the other day from the Ubuntu Developer Summit, and he was talking about, you know, how important it is that the first time, you know, that the installation process is completely seamless and that, you know, it all works first time and blah, 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 as if people are going to have absolute zero persistence, and that, you know, that kind of product, it seems like product kind of thinking is infiltrating in there, as if, you know, people somehow expect that when they install an operating system, it has to work absolutely completely perfectly first time, and that, you know, there are never going to be any snags, and it has to be, you know, almost orgasmic in quality, otherwise, fuck it, I'll go back to Windows. It seems a very kind of...
In that instance, he's probably right, isn't he, that they're fighting an uphill battle all the time. I mean, to me, that's a question of technical optimization. They've got two approaches. They could either make it easy for users to optimize their hardware to run Ubuntu, or they can make it so that Ubuntu runs on absolutely everything that the user might put it on. And they're choosing the latter approach. So I think...
I was more referring to the sort of... that was just an example, but the whole sort of, there's a huge amount of focus from the user experience people on the first time, you know, and like Aral Balkan, who some of you might know, who's a, you know, he's a nice guy, and he's, you know, he does iPhone development now, and
Android, he does mobile dev generally.
Mobile dev, and he used to do Flash development. And he's always going on about user experience now, and he did a whole sort of review of the three MiFi, and he said, you know, that the three MiFi, you know, has a terrible user experience, and it's absolutely atrocious, and that he was going to be returning his. And you sort of think, you know, he's a technical enough guy. You know, if you're building software. Yes, the original 3 MiFi has a fucking awful user experience. So what? You know, it gives you a fucking internet connection. That's the point.
Yeah, water is wet.
You know.
This is like, you know, the thing that is right is that you're saying that, right? And that'll be fine. Except, in, you know, when you talk about Apple... You praise the user experience. You praise the beautiful design, and you know, and it's like, it sounds like you guys are talking those like two different things. You know,
you're just baking me, aren't you, Ian?
No, Ian. My issue. If I had to, you know, the user experience thing I have a problem with, but you know, with the Mac is the fact that people, you know, sort of say, oh, it's all based on the sort of, you know, the initial sort of expectations, and they get all very precious about the manual, and, you know, the fact that it doesn't come with a manual, because you don't have to read this, like, 400-page manual, it's so complicated, you just get this thing, and it's got a picture of a Mac, and you plug it in, and then you press on, and it all just works. It may do that. That is not a selling point. It's because it's telling you about the first 30 seconds of the product. Or the computer, as we, you know, it's not saying about the whole life cycle, you know, or the whole thing about using it. I do think that the Mac does actually have better user experience, if we want to use that Ponzi word. But you know, it's the products. The product thing is what makes people focus on the first 30 seconds of use, which, you know, is really a very
I mean, I get what you're saying. I think it's a bit of a red herring. Because I think it's a small instance of the problem. What I'm really saying is the user experience stuff, there's way too much focus on it. Because it's just another case of premature optimization, that people end up not doing things because they're thinking too much about the user experience and, or even worse than that, the product. You know, what's my marketplace? You know, what's the price point that I'm going to sell this at? Make it, get the fucking thing out there, see if anybody likes it.
Also, one word, MySpace, right? If anyone thinks that you need user experience and super-duper design to become, or at least for a short period, the most popular fucking social networking site on the planet, you know, MySpace.
You just don't. I'm afraid you just don't.
I agree with Nick. I think focusing on user experience to the detriment of everything else is wrong. I mean, user experience is part and parcel of the whole item you're making. You know, you can have a crap user experience and a good, and see the air quotes here, product, and the product itself will sell. You know, you can have a shitty cover on a book. I mean, if it's a good book, you know, word of mouth will get around, it will sell. Yeah, user experience in itself is not the end. Is not the end target. You know, user experience. You know, you can have all sorts of crazy animations in your application, all the rest of it. And for the first 5 minutes, you'll think, wow, these animations, I click on this and I get an animation or something else. After about 2 days of using, you'll think, that's 10 seconds I've wasted in this animation. I just want to bloody do what I want to do, not wait 10 seconds every time I press the bloody buttons.
That would be bad user experience.
Bad user experience. That's what I'm saying. User experience without looking at the totality of what you're making is bad. Yeah. User experience is not the end. It's part of everything.
It comes back to what I was saying in when we were discussing Apple. I don't believe that beauty is a prime mover for users. What they actually want is a tool that does X.
But if it does it beautifully,
it's going to win out over a tool that does X, maybe marginally better. The point is that beauty is subjective. So if it does it beautifully, you are going to get a bunch of people, not all of them, but a bunch of people to appreciate it even more.
Beauty is subjective. I'm agreeing with you, Nick.
There are some fairly hard and fast rules that not adhering to beauty may be, it's like saying, you know, that you can tell, yes, you know, bits of beauty are subjective, but you can quite easily tell in certain search situations. No. The difference between,
beauty is not visual. I mean, Git, for example. I think there's beauty in Git. I think there is material, but that's not visual beauty. That's an elegance beauty.
That's just appreciating the beauty of a particular abstraction, right? I mean,
the things on the screen is a visual thing, is it?
The things on the screen you see are just abstractions. Beauty is all about abstractions and form. Software can have a form in as you know, it certainly has form.
I'd say beauty, its abstraction, or it's a visual thing, and its functionality and its usefulness.
It's
more of a tenuous thing. You know beauty when you see it.
My point about beauty was that in opposition to what Tom is trying to say is that, you know, you go and look at a bunch of computer users in an office, and some of them, they've got a black screen with black window bars and black backgrounds. And, some of these people, you look at their screens and you think, okay, now, how do you use that? And you can just imagine the user experience designers sort of walking in and going, oh, my God, and having an immediate heart attack. But people use it.
Because you don't get fucking eye strain.
Yeah, but there's other ways as well. I remember when I first started working in an office and we were using Windows 3.1, and you know, you're in there, and everyone discovered Windows. You know, the color schemes you could put onto Windows 3.5, and everyone had the most ugliest ones on there, and they were ugly, but they weren't changing it because they wanted to change. You know, they wanted that particular color scheme. It was the only thing about their working environment they could change, so they changed it to something that said, you know, I'm not going to be tied down by the man. You know, so changing colour schemes like that is more than just about what it looks like. It's more about the feeling it gets to, you know, I can change it. I'm going to change it to something really ugly just because I can. And it's, you know, regardless of, you know, basically it was the only thing they could change about their computer environment.
So, yeah, well, so which serves my point, right, that it doesn't really matter.
No, it does matter, but there's different people change things for different reasons. People's ideas of beauty are different for different reasons.
The substance of my rant is that the main thing is to get a product out there. Wumi is showing, and certain MySpace is showing, that a lack of design or a lack of product design is not a hindrance to actually get something that users will use. Users can tell you really, really quickly, especially on the internet, whether something works or not. That's not to say that you should put something out there and then stick two fingers up at them. That's not what I mean. What I mean is stop focusing on product.
Are you talking about the release early, release often sort of philosophy?
Just get something out there, get feedback, change it, iterate it. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's a way to achieve a good product without having to focus on what would design the product in the first place. You don't have to do that. You can just make something, see if people use it. If people use it, listen to what they tell you, rather than trying to outthink them before you even know.
I'm back.
I'm with you.
That should all still be recording.
Oh, okay.
This is why I call in from the iPod Touch.
So I see.
It's on the anyway, okay. You were saying.
Well, I think we've finished. I'd be really interested in Ian's views because he is a designer, and I think it's interesting that he's hedged his bets a bit, but that's fine.
Ian, anything?
No.
Go on, Ian. I put my balls out there.
What's that?
I put my balls out there, Ian. Come on.
There's so much to talk about, but...
Yeah,
I got a feeling that it's probably keep this one short because it's getting quite late.
It is half midnight. Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have we got
a stage at which Ollie Reed would drop his trousers?
What?
I watched that live.
Me too. Yeah.
After Dark, it was a program that was on a long time ago.
Have we got anything else we need to mention?
Please tell me we don't have a porn site of the week.
We don't, thankfully. this is going to become a much more occasional appearance. So, if you're a guest on the show when we happen to have a bizarre porn site, I did search for something the other day. I can't remember what it was, and it was something Linux related, and I got nothing but porn. It was absolutely hilarious. But that's not really a porn site. It's just more Google being incompetent.
Is Linux porn just ugly women just putting it out there and seeing what happens?
Yeah, see what happens. Linux porn. Google images, safe surf off.
Oh, come on, knock it on the head.
Where is it?
We've been going for 2 hours.
It's gone to bed. There's a nice one of two Lego men, one with a jackhammer sticking up the other one's arse, and underneath it says Gentoo Linux, build your own excitement piece by piece. What else have we got here?
Sorry, I brought it up now.
You can't find the web server HTTP. Bloody idiots who can't. There is surprisingly little. Well, actually, not surprisingly, there's little. Oh, actually, we have got not so much a porn site of the week, but as alluded to earlier, there is a Linux distribution of the week, which I know everyone will be exceptionally excited about. You can download it from hannahmontana.sourceforge.net. This is Hannah Montana Linux, a Unix-like Linux operating system based on Kubuntu, but with Hannah Montana in it. When you boot it up, it plays Hannah Montana audio. It has a Hannah Montana splash screen and desktop, and it even has Tux the Linux Penguin with Hannah Montana's logo splashed across his chest.
You know, the thing about this is that I actually haven't really got a problem with this. I think it's actually quite a good thing.
Oh, no, I haven't got a problem with it either. I think it's funny.
I think it's funny. Well, it's only a skin over the top.
It's only a Kubuntu remix.
I mean, what's next week? Justin Bieber.
That's also a good thing because it means that, you know, it shows that once again that users can actually be empowered to do their own stuff and share their own skills with other people rather than being suckered by a company.
Take that, Apple. There's no Hannah Montana OS 10 for you.
You can make one, though. I mean,
you can't distribute a Hackintosh. Well, actually, you probably can. You can distribute it legally.
You can distribute a theme. You can distribute a theme, because that's all that is. That's just a theme. You can do a Hannah Montana theme. You can swap out your icons, change your desktop theme, add the sounds, you know, for things. Nothing to stop
actually,
you doing
that. I was wondering, actually.
It's only a skinning.
Just for at this point, I was wondering how many actual OSX users actually change
their OS 10. OS 10, fuck's sakes.
What's that?
OS 10, it's called Mac OS 10.
OS 10, whatever.
No, I don't call it Linux or Ubuntu.
No, you need to call it GNU Linux, damn it.
Yeah, GNU Linux. Sorry, carry on. How many people do
I wonder, but I do wonder how many people actually do change the defaults in OS 10.
Quite a few, so much so that Panic actually do a small application that helps you do it. It's called Candy Bar. It lets you skin your...
Like it's a PC.
Yeah.
With Windows, it always seems to be customized in some way. From, like, you know, for either just like, the way that the color scheme to whatever. I wonder how many users, like went to Mac, look at someone's shoulder, and it always seems to be the same color scheme, the same... layout, everything seems to be pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah, because
I
it doesn't.
Know what I mean, but I'm just interested to.
I did see.
You can change it. There's two. There's the slightly coloured version as well, which has little coloured bars in it. Or you can go for the graphite version, which is completely colour free. That's designed for designers who don't want to ruin their colour corrected eyes.
Who only want to see new. I have my desktop background set to a plain black background, but that's because I like.
I don't mess about with it, but you know, people who do design and do Photoshop and want to mess around with it, you know, there are apps that let you change things. I don't do it.
You don't need to use an app to change your background.
But there's apps to.
There are for people who want to, but
there are apps for people who want to do it. But the point is, there's more important things to do than change the way things look.
It's about empowering the user. And
it's doable.
I'm not saying Windows is empowering the user, but...
No, I know what you mean, yeah.
It's actually pick how they want it to
it's look doable. It's doable.
I saw...
It's doable. It's doable. It's able to be done.
I wonder how many people actually do it, though.
I didn't say terrible. I don't know.
We will never know, unless, you know, Apple start monitoring that as part of their statistics gathering. But I did see a very amusing tweet a while back, actually, and it was somebody who had gone to Deconstruct and they were there, and John Gruber was speaking at Deconstruct this year.
Oh, God almighty. Yeah, carry on.
And I listened to his talk, I thought it was a load of wank, but
thought he phoned it in, basically.
But there was somebody who said on Twitter just before his talk, and it got retweeted a bit, and they were saying that, you know, they had watched, you know, they'd seen his desktop. What the fuck? That they had seen his desktop, and it had the neutral Mac background, and it was set exactly as it comes by default. And somebody had sort of said, oh, well, you know, look, John Gruber, he's such a Mac fanboy that he never changes any of the defaults as set by Apple. Until somebody pointed out to them that when you're giving a presentation, setting up a separate user account so that when you're going to, you know, when you're showing something in your browser or your porn doesn't come up or whatever, is kind of a nice idea, and that quite a lot of people do that.
That's something that really bugs me. I mean, I watch screencasts, and people who do their screencasts, they've always got they always do it from their normal account, and it's got their funky little setups and their icon sizes, and it's got their backgrounds. It's always like, look how cool I am. I've got this background. I've got this. It's just a worrying distraction. There's a reason to use the plain standard background. That's it. It doesn't distract from what you're showing, and it's idiocy.
And well, I'm finally giving up on any hope of anybody being funny at all in this podcast. Because as you totally missed the opportunity to say, I watch a lot of screencasts and I'm always really disappointed when it comes up and it's huge knockers.
I shut them up, you knock them down.
Right, well, as we've now hopefully cleared all the App Store discussion from our veins... hopefully, next week we can be funny and we can make more bum jokes.
Well, put me on in 90 days' time when the app. Put me on in 90 days' time when the app store's running, and we'll revisit the whole thing.
Right,
we want you on again, Ibiza, and not talk about the app store. We'll talk about.
I'd actually like to come on once and not talk about Apple, because I just seem like I'm a shill for them. But as we said,
that's why I would like to get more people on. Apple users are so. Or I find them, I'm sure they'll say the same thing about me, but I find Apple users so enthusiastic about Apple, which is one of the things that, of course, bothers people like Ian and me. You're the only one who's really coming on here to defend them. Even Cristiano hasn't really done, he came on to moan about the buttons on his phone rather than to defend Apple. I would like some, it'd be great if we could get some Apple users to step up and say, no, you guys are so wrong, and Bees is right, you know, blah, 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 I'd love that.
They're even better at Jobs is right. We want to get some real hardcore fundamentalists on there, if only because they're good for ratings.
Well, if you want, I can ask around, I can get another Mac developer on it too, if you want.
So long as they don't have a problem if we say cunt.
No, they won't. And you've met them. You've met some of them already.
Yeah. Right. Should we call it a day then?
Oh, please.
Yeah.
A day then.
I didn't specify what we should call a day, but I reckon we should call days days. But anyway. Nick, do you want to take us out?
I certainly will. Right, bye then.
I thought you were going to do David fucking Frost, but we're going to have a
David Frost. It was you who kept going about that, and then you fancy him.
We're going to have a romantic tryst with David Frost's erections.
Okay. Can't get it out of your head, can you?
No, I'm putting it into listeners' heads. It's a bit like Rickroll, but you don't even have to show them the picture. You just say David Frost's erections.
Okay, let's do this. You seem dissatisfied with my first attempt. Let's go down again. So, Tom Morris, say goodbye.
Bye.
Ian Forrester, say goodbye.
Ian says goodbye.
Please, NASA, say goodbye.
Good morning, good evening, and good night.
And it's goodbye from me, goodbye.
Done.
Done, thank God.
Right.